Well, welcome everyone. My name is Ash Bolero. Your speaker today is Sean McGing, and the topic is a case study on developing risk management governance at a not-for-profit. Sean is director of his own consulting firm, McGing Advisory and Actuarial. He provides consulting advice to directors and to directors, senior executives and their teams on a range of issues including strategy, operational and risk improvements, governance, and new products. He's also a professional non-executive director for businesses benefiting from his financial risk management and varied business experience. He previously established and ran Askit Consulting and was a partner at Ernst & Young. So he's got plenty of experience. Sean will present for 20 minutes or so, and then afterwards we'll have question and answers. I'll now pass it over to Sean. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Ash. I could go for 40 minutes or longer, but I won't. I won't inflict that on you. So, yeah, I'll go for maybe 20 minutes or so, and then we'll have a bit of a discussion. So the objectives of this are to basically share the risk management process and learnings that I went through in the school where my daughters did go to school. The two of them have just left recently, and share with you the journey of being an actuary, but not in an actuarial role as such, and bear my soul, I suppose, to some extent with what I learned, and share that with you. But the one thing that really came out for me was that actuaries really can add value in those sort of circumstances, even though they're not actuarial. And also encourage those of you, not that there's very many of you here, but if we can spread the word afar through the profession to encourage us as individuals to do these things, to take our own personal risks and to realize that we have quite a lot to offer in risk management. Now, this is very fitting for a Catholic institution, which was the school. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And the courage and the wisdom in that, and probably particularly the courage, was something which really hit me going through this process. Because there was a big mix of people, some from education background. I was an actuary, and there was a medical expert as well. And you know, I knew nothing really about education, and the medical person didn't either. But we complemented each other very well. It was very positive. Now, the case study itself, that's the college. Just to give you some facts and figures to get a feeling for the size of the institution, the sort of risks that arise. And it's always interesting to compare these to the financial risks that we're more used to day by day. 730 students, you know, revenue 12 million per annum, and they use every cent of that. 162 external learning activities, and that's not including the sports activities. So you can see the scope for risk. And I might also add that Camberwell, where the school is situated, is one of the most densely populated areas for schools of this type. So there's an incredibly competitive environment in terms of winning students and having retention of students as well. Probably the first thing that really struck was the fact that the mission of the school is absolutely incredible. That's probably the number one strategic risk in any event for the school. It's the charisma, as they call it. It's philosophy, and there's an 800-year tradition in that, and that's really, really important. And as you know, in the Catholic churches, the numbers of priests and brothers and nuns just fades away in developed countries. That is a real issue. How do they hand forward the flame, and then the enormous risks to that going forward? the board brief. Well, they did. They had wanted to deal with risk management for quite some time, but didn't really know how to get started, and were uncomfortable about what should they do, what should they not do, and where might it lead them. But they did take the bold step of putting it into their strategic plan specifically to address risk, and that was the 2009 to 2013 plan or 2014 plan, and specific sub-point risk management. So what they did was they had an in-service day, and they got a sector expert on board governance to come talk to the board, and that person actually gave a little presentation on risk in schools. And at that particular in-service day, he looked for volunteers, and you know, I ended up volunteering and then becoming chair. The rest is history, I suppose. But it was from that initial action by the board, hey, we need to do something about this. Let's start with having a presentation so we learn something. And it went from there. So the risk management working group that was formed that day, its brief was firstly to come up with a policy, a risk management policy, and then to also come up with a risk management plan, which would be the implementation of the policy. And that was it. We were on our way. What we did then when we did have our first meeting is we sat down and we came up with the terms of reference for the risk management working group, as we called ourselves. Now, the process, I'll spend a bit of time on this slide because it sets out the steps, but it also gives you a bit of a feel for what was going on. The first one was understanding risk management. As I mentioned, we came from different backgrounds, and the education people knew how to run the school and knew about learning and pedagogy and all those wonderful things. But they didn't understand anything about risk management frameworks. Even the language, the terminology, was very confusing for them. So we spent quite a bit of time, for instance, just distributing various reading articles and the like, which would just get people used to the terminology. And then we talked about it at our first couple of meetings and went back and forth around and discussed the issues and perhaps some of the major risks that people thought of. Then we looked at the literature that was around on methodologies, and the ASX corporate governance principles were key, really, because one of their principles is all about risk management, and it's about 3 pages. It's in the appendix to the paper, and it's actually very good. And between that and ISO 31000, which is the global standard on risk management and was actually developed in Australia, they give a superb framework for actually methodically going through a process around risk management. The principles for developing and implementing, we had a good think about what really were we trying to do and what should drive us. So the first thing we decided was an awareness of risk and a risk management culture among the staff was really important. And think about how we might do that. And that's really all about doing the right thing for things like safety and better learning. We wanted to avoid overcomplicating things. And this was really important so as not to drag everyone down in the detail. And you might say, gee, as an actuary, you weren't really a potentially good person to do that. But we were very strong on not getting into too much detail because that would just suffocate us. And we started with a solid but relatively small base of particular risks. And we've come across those in number 8 there, risk appetite, equal to the VRQA, which is the Victorian quality guidelines for schools. So they're minimum standards for the schools. We thought, okay, we'll start there. They're immediate risks that the education people can actually think of in that way. Good place to start. Then we decided, well, someone within the college really needs to take ownership of this, other than the principal. The principal has the delegated authority from the board for risk management and for the safe operation, productive operation of the school. So for risk management, she needed to delegate that to someone that could give it the focus that it deserved and could learn and could drive it really within the college. So she selected her director of staff and administration to be the person, and he was co-opted on to the risk management committee and basically learned with us. The identification of risk, the draft risk management policy, we actually started with a pro forma from the person at the in-service day who gave us, these are the sorts of things you have in a policy, and the college itself had sampled policies, with rationales and principles and guidelines. So we start with one of those and we drafted a policy, and then we let it sit for a couple of months as we went through the rest of the exercise. Then we came back and finalised the policy later. The identification of risk looked at, well, what are the risk categories in a school, and the VRQA standards, and in fact, we found other material on the web which were very useful. The Departments of Education in Western Australia in particular were very good. And we did look at quite a lot of material. So we picked that one. What we found is that within our own sector, which is number 10 there, other schools, there was actually virtually no practice of implementing risk management. So the principal would ring some of these other schools and say, what are you doing on risk management, which is where they share their IP. And said, no, but when you do something, let me know. we'd be delighted to share that. So for the identification of risk, it came back to those, what were the key categories. From the Western Australian ones, we had things like safety, learning improvements, financial, legal, reputation. They were the key ones. The paper has a number of diagrams and tables in there which set them out, so it's worth having a read of that if you're interested. The risk assessment is probably the only truly actuarial bit in the whole thing, so I won't go into details of that, but essentially you look at your risk and you decide how big it might be and what the consequences are and what's the likelihood of it happening, and then you rate it according to all those elements after you've taken into account your control factors. So what's in place in the school to prevent someone being left behind, for instance, after an overseas trip or something like that. They're the sorts of controls that need to be in place. But it's very real, and it was very different to financial services. Quite interesting. The risk register software, very soon we realised that, hey, that there is a lot of detail here and you need just some sort of organisation around it. We did get some software on sort of semi-loan, semi-try, pay a little bit from a friend of a friend at the college, which actually turned out to be quite a good piece of software. Periscope Consulting are the people's names, and they actually do risk management for some of the miners and people like that. So the network worked well, and it got us able to focus a bit on, well, how do we capture these risks and how do we document whatever analysis we do on these risks, and going forward in particular, how might we report on those risks? So a fair bit of effort has gone into understanding how the risks that we identified can be best registered, best documented, and then for going forward get notification of changes to those risks, etc., and support the documentation that goes with them. And then after all of that, after working through all of that, we came up with a plan which essentially crystallized a lot of what we had done, but for going forward. So it took us about a year to get through that process, and we made our recommendations to the board. And since then, basically, we've been going through an implementation phase. So I'm just going to flick through these. I've got a lot of slides here. In fact, I've got some printed copies of them there if anybody wants to take one afterwards. The paper is up on the website now. It hasn't been up there very long. It went up on Friday. I think the presentation will go up tonight or something like that, the full one. this looks like a control cycle, doesn't it? but amazingly helpful. There's the process. Again, it's this fair bit to take in. At the core is the risk analysis, but essentially it goes through the steps that I mentioned earlier. Now, this risk consequence table is a good way of expressing risk appetite for a school, because you say, well, risk appetite, what does that mean? Particular to a group of people who are struggling with the terminology anyway. Across the top, we've got the risk categories, so the key risk categories for the school. Achievement targets, safety is a critical one, and the wide column there is around the charism and the reputation and the image. And then the ranks from insignificant down to catastrophic 5 things. And when you populate that table, and we did that around the committee, and then we went to the board with those, it was actually easier than you might have thought at first instance. Things fell closely together, and obviously we consulted on the financial side. You know, we talked to the business manager, and you bounce these around the table and say, well, do you think that's a big loss? Or it's a big loss. And for a school that size, those things came out fairly easily, which was good. And essentially that then gives you a risk appetite. So we could go to the board and say, these are the sorts of risks that we're saying are either insignificant or moderate, or, you know, are you comfortable with that or not? And we had some discussions, but people were generally accepting of those. It was a good way of getting across. That's just an example of a single risk going into the risk register. So you've got the risk, then you've got the control. So whatever is currently in place to limit the risk or mitigate the risk. And then the rating process, and you see the categories there. Satisfactory, poor, unknown. And again, having these checklists almost as part of the process help people think about them. And as I say, the methodology in ISO 31000 was excellent in that regard. Okay, and ultimately treatment at the end of the day, which is important. Okay. So just for the actuaries in the room, a bit of a comparison at a very high level of the fundamental different nature of the risks that are involved. So for a school, health and safety is absolutely critical. Without that, you can't go anywhere. Charism, identity is the next most, which is probably hardest for those outside of this particular school to realise. Learning outcomes, you know, financial is well down the list. Whereas a life insurer strategic is a critical long-term one, because if you're not in the game, you can't win. But then financial dominate thereafter. And basically we're implementing the plan, and these are what we're doing for this year. And it's a journey, it's learning as we go, and it's getting that understanding, that much deeper understanding through the school. And things like awareness and action are through the sort of the principal reporting in her monthly report to the board on what actions have happened around risk management. So it might be at her executive group that they've discussed a particular risk. It might be those external learning activities or something like that. Go through. Okay, learnings and outcomes today. Value of taking time to understand at the beginning is important. The key corporate governance elements that are there, already there as a framework, ASX and ISO 30000. And just the teamwork was wonderful on the, you know, when it's in a voluntary capacity. Most of us were in a voluntary capacity other than the teachers. Then, you know, you get a great buzz of interaction, and people are open and honest. And the diversity of background helped enormously as well to see things from different perspectives. And then not too much detail. Good, but always hard. Positive risk culture. The board was certainly very pleased with the process at the end, and you know, volunteered to send us all a nice thank you letter at the end of the process, because they learned a lot. But we're all recognised it's just a journey. We're on our way. The second part of the paper is really trying to to take that and bring it across to us as actuaries. What does that mean for us, and what can we do? What were my learnings, and how can we apply them all after? So I just went through some of those. Where was I comfortable? Where was I not? How are we doing for time?
15 minutes.
Okay, well, I should... I'll... let me just say a little bit about where I was comfortable and not. I really enjoyed the systematic going through all the methodologies. That was great for an actuary. There's all these things you go through, and explaining the concepts and the terminology was good. Chairing the meetings were fun as well. The uncomfortable part was, I suppose, firstly, truly understanding what were the real risks in the school, because that was just quite different, and you know, soaking it up and thinking hard about it and listening hard. That was just uncomfortable, because you like to think you know everything when you're tackling the task, but of course you don't. The difficulties around fitting the risks that we identified into various categories, and what sort of how to document them, and how deep to go, or how not to overdo it, was probably the biggest challenge of all. And to help the administration manager who had that responsibility going forward, to guide him, but not to tell him what to do, because it's his school and he knows the risks of the school better. So that just, it took time and application. They were the key discomfort things. The satisfaction was just getting the job done and seeing the learning transfer across. And I learned quite a bit about schools and a bit about risk management processes as well, and going through that. On reflection, I pulled out these skills, actuary skills, and you could take out the risk management part up there and just leave the skills, because that's where they originally came from Jules Gribble's paper back in 2003 when he did that at Melbourne Uni. Now these are the skills that we have, and they all of those in one way or another really came through in the risk management project at the school. And it was quite interesting that it was more those elements and you know, influencing interpersonal skills, communication, being rigorous, but being flexible at the same time. Quite interesting. So I'll just ask you to reflect on those. And there's another list here that I have, which came from Shepherd in 2007, which is the result of a survey that the Institute did. So these are all skills that as actuaries we have to a greater or lesser extent. And every one of those is so valuable to risk management. That was the key message that I had from all of this. And I suppose the other thing is, and David Goodsell in a recent article in the Actuary magazine stressed, you know, the need for all of us, and you're brave enough to come along here this morning. Maybe this should be from the pulpit in the big room. You know, to step up and have a go and come out of your comfort zone to actually try these things. We do learn very quickly, which is fantastic, and then something like this where it's new, that's a great skill, and not everybody has that skill. And I think sometimes we don't do ourselves enough justice in our capabilities around these things. But then apply the techniques and what you've learned in a measured way, and just learn from others as you go through the process. Go humbly forth, and thou shalt learn and add value. To end with a biblical saying, do not be afraid. So, conclusions, we do have powerful risk management skills, you know, well beyond financial services, and we should believe in those hidden, inherent capabilities that we have, and just take the risk of demonstrating them. And, you know, we have an ability to add these skills in lots of non-for-profits out there. There's a lot of charities, you know, it's schools, it's hospitals, it's fundraising organisations out there who have a lot of different risks. And, you know, as actuaries, we can add a lot in those organisations. The final one is really, I suppose, what the Institute's been trying to do for a while, but is always tough, is just to get across to our business leaders and government leaders to raise the profile of actuaries from a risk management perspective and the capabilities that we have. Thank you to everyone that was involved along the way. So I probably have gone on a little bit too long, but shoot with your questions.
Thanks, Sean. We've got about 10 minutes for questions. If you do have a question, could you please come to the microphone because the session is being recorded. Thanks.
Janice Jones, PricewaterhouseCoopers, also a school board director of one meeting so far, so it'll be good to see how this unfolds at our school. Having taken super funds through the risk management framework structure back in 2004, how did your board manage not to leap to the finish? I think once people see that matrix and ratings, they tended to go, the risk is this and the solution is that and we've already done this, so that one's a green now, when really they need to be back at stage one. What are we doing this for? Why are we doing it? How did you manage that process as the chair?
I think there wasn't that same sort of attitude within the committee members to just jump at things. They were all very conscious of the fact that they hadn't done anything like this before. And really saw themselves in learning mode through all this process. So they were quite considered in working through the process. And I think the board too, it takes a long-term view. So this had been on the back of their minds and probably in the front of the mind of the chair for a couple of years, but hadn't come out because there were other things that were busier or, got more attention. But when it did come through, because it came through in the context of the strategic plan, which is a 5-year plan, and you set your priorities. So I think they were very considered in their approach. Yeah, and they're still. So we created a risk management committee when the risk management group fulfilled its function and provided the plan. And I suppose from my experience with these sorts of things more generally, there's an awful lot that you learn along the way, and it's dangerous to be dogmatic about these things. So that probably helped.
Lindsay Mann. Sean, I was wondering whether in the process of building your matrices up, another aspect you didn't put up on the slides, but I'm sure you went through, was likelihood. It's all very well to have these tables saying what is a risk and quant. But did you find that you were able to help the school at all in terms of quantifying the likelihood of these risks occurring? Or were you in a vacuum of data? Were there techniques that you were able to assist there? And to save me getting up, I'll ask the second question.
Yeah.
Once you bring out the plan and say, okay, these are the risk areas and this is what can be done to mitigate or eliminate a risk, how easy it was to translate that into action, given that every one of those things involves costs, and the board previously probably wasn't budgeting for that. I've found that in the past the most difficult thing is to say, well, we should do all these things, but how do you prioritise the costing, the spending?
Yeah. Just on the second one, in terms of the number of risks and what would be done about them, I was very careful not to be the board person who tells them what to do, because that's not my area of expertise around the risks themselves, because they're the risks arising in the school. And from the culture perspective and just from the making sure that they're knowledgeable and educated and able to do things and take the actions going forward, it's really critical that they own it, that they own the responsibility for the risks and for dealing with those risks. I think what I found was that when you drill down to specific risks, they were much more comfortable because, in fact, they've been practicing these things all the time. And a good example is the external learning activity, where the director of staff and administration actually went and he talked to the two key people at the school who have responsibility for these external learning activities, for organising the excursions and that. And they already had a checklist with various questions that they ask, etc., and certain controls depending on where they were going and what the purpose of the visit was, and, you know, teach so many teachers per students and all those sorts of things. So what this process did was enable him to just think a bit more deeply and more widely about it, and it was really a refinement of the process rather than new things, I think. Which I think at the end of the day gave some comfort to all of them. So from the beginning, being a bit scared of, you know, oh, well, I could be sued for this, I could be sued for that, I could be sued for the other. and that, almost the fear of paralysis, where you don't do anything because you're afraid to do anything. But they were quite good philosophically about it. And I think part of that was from the history of their order, from the Dominicans, where they have this, you know, there's an 800-year tradition of preaching, and they've always had to confront society at the time, I suppose, and be brave and courageous. So they were okay doing that because they could see in the long run this is going to give me a better learning outcome, and it's okay to take that risk. So I'm wandering a bit, but just to add to the flavour of things, one of the key things of risk management, as I'm sure you all know, is balancing risk and opportunity. And schools, because it's not profit-making institution, it's easier for them to just see the risks and see the downsides. But by working through this process, they could see and accept quite readily, and we're very comfortable with the fact that the other side of the coin is the opportunities to improve learning. And I think for some, that's the way, you know, they were relieved at that, well, that makes sense. And you know, when we do these learning activities or we try a new way of teaching, it may not work, but it's worth a try when all the factors point to the fact that it should work. Now, your first question, Lindsay, what was that?
Well, in terms of assessing likelihood.
Oh, likelihood, yeah. The only techniques as such that I think were useful coming from me were the fact that I was able to explain that if you've got a risk and in a sense there's a chance of it happening, there's either a big chance or a small chance or a tiny chance, that was about it. But the methodology is quite simple in that it is the amount of the potential loss multiplied by the likelihood. So it's likelihood rather than probability. And that then gives you an outcome. And in one of these, we go to here. So the rating, so the risk consequences, you know, moderate, and the risk likelihood is there. So it's almost certain, likely, unlikely, and rare. That was as far as you needed to go. And in fact, it was really good that you didn't go any further than that, because all you wanted was a sense of where did you end up. And there's a piece really between that's part of the rating. The last piece of the rating is what rating you end up with when you multiply the consequences by the likelihood. And you get a risk rating, and that's high, medium, or low. And that then gives you your prioritization, because it's the high stuff you worry about. And the rest, you know, the mediums, you just have a look to see, well, is that, should it be medium or should it be high? And then you concentrate on the high stuff. So prioritization was a very important part of it. So we went through the process. We came up with about 50 risks across the areas, and then we prioritized them. And we're now working on the prioritized ones, and that the higher ones, the high risk and medium ones, and doing a deeper risk assessment of those. And it could be that controlled cycle type thing as we go on. Yeah.
Bruce Thompson. In a voluntary capacity and also with small clients, I have, in an informal way, done projects similar to this. And one of the questions I'm hoping you can give a bit more on, you mentioned communication with some arrows over there.
Yes.
Were you involving all the teaching staff and the ancillary staff at some stage?
No, I wasn't. No.
Well done. Explain, why did you not involve everyone then?
I think it comes back to what I was saying about it being important for the director of staff administration. So the person with responsibility at the college, that it's really... They're going to be the driver of the implementation of risk management, so they need to own it. And they're the best person, I would have thought, to communicate with their teachers and their staff. And the other side is just the time practicalities of it, particularly given that I'm a board member, so you know you don't want the board telling the committee, telling the staff... to do things.
Okay. I'll jump in with a second question. When you introduce a profit motive or money as a more important thing, risk versus return becomes interesting. And I'm wondering if you had instances, as I did, whereby you decided you were applying too much protection, that in fact you were spending too much, call it money or time or whatever it was, you were overprotected. Did risk management end up suggesting you were managing some risks too much?
I don't think we got to that point or haven't got to that point so far. I think the resource constraints on the school and on the individuals there make that hard to happen. It's easy to get bogged down, I suppose, in compliance type things. So that's probably the biggest risk. But otherwise, you know, this person who has responsibility for this, it's just a small part of his time. So he can't overindulge in any piece, which was one of the reasons why we were very, very strong. I was very strong on saying, trying to not get into too much detail. It's a balance, because just time goes.
So, David, did you have a question?
You want to keep the time, so yeah. Forget
okay.
it.
All right. All right. Thanks, Sean, for an excellent presentation. I'm sure everyone wants to go to afternoon tea as well. Could you all maybe fill out your feedback forms, sort of deposit it in the box on this floor. Could you please all join me in thanking Sean for an excellent presentation.